Justin, what's going on, my brother?
Yo, what's good?
What's up? What is good? You know what's good? Let's jump right into this week's episode because we're gonna talk about something that's good and I'm gonna say surprisingly good. And this week we're talking about the new Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves movie, which I mean I already said it was surprisingly good. I don't want to give away the whole gambit here before we get into our full review, but this was a movie that I knew had been coming out for a long time, and I know that there was an original Dungeons and Dragons movie in the early 2000s which was terrible, but man, this movie kind of took me by surprise with how good it was. We can chat about it here in a sec, but I want to get your initial thoughts before we get into the nitty-gritty.
So if this movie had come out about 4 months and or 3 months and 12 days ago and came out in 2022, this probably would have been my sleeper pick back when we did our Oscars or our Two Brothers Awards show. This probably would have been my sleeper or surprise, I think we called it, movie of the year, because I didn't really want to see this movie. I didn't expect anything of it. I kind of just saw it because you were going to see it and I was going up to visit you that weekend. Yeah. And I had seen like one trailer for it and it looked pretty terrible, to be honest. In the trailers, they did not sell this movie really at all, for me at least. Mm-hmm. And it was a great time.
Yeah.
It was like super fun. It's just nice just going to a movie and just watching it and having a fun time. Like, I mean, I know we said something similar about John Wick, but John Wick, I had high expectations going in and they met them, right? This, I just went in, had a great time, laughed. There was some okay action. It wasn't like earth-shattering in terms of the action or the story or anything.
Right.
It was just like a movie that entertained me. And what more can you ask for when you're kind of just going on a whim, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I also did not expect too much from this movie. I have been playing a little D&D as I'm trying to get into it a little bit late in life here. Side note, I recently learned that our father, the legendary John Vamp, used to be a big D&D guy back in the day. He would play with his cousins all the time. And I found this out talking to them about it, not even talking to dad. And it's just not something that we ever got into when we were younger, which surprised me after the fact, knowing how much dad was into it when he was a kid. So I gotta say, a little upset that he didn't get us into it earlier. But D&D,
I mean, that surprised me a little bit because he hadn't ever mentioned it, but it also doesn't surprise me at all.
Right.
Because growing up, he would just tell stories and just make up stories. And he always has had like a very imaginative mind, I guess. Like, he's an author now, so he writes stories. And obviously he's been publishing them now, but he wrote a ton of stories and books and stuff that never made it to publishing, or that he stopped because he, you know, had other things he was working on. But he would always come up with these way too elaborate, like, bedtime stories and stuff like that. So I could totally see him in a game where the object of the game is to tell a story. Like, this seems exactly like something he would find awesome.
Oh yeah, it totally like didn't surprise me at the same time. Like you said, it surprised you and didn't surprise you. Like, it took me a little bit off guard that, again, it's something that he never really talked about to us. Like, we never played it when we were kids. He never had like any of the, you know, books or monster manual around, so we never got into it. But yeah, you mentioned the bedtime story because I'm sure you remember this, but he would tell us, you know, when we were wee lads, are these bedtime stories about these two characters that he invented called Mr. Bear and Mr. Lion. And the way he would tell it is he would, you know, give like a premise, and then as he would go throughout the story, he would ask us, he'd be like, and what do Mr. Bear and Mr. Lion see? And we'd be like, I don't know, like a field of marshmallows or something. And he would just go with our suggestions, which is very much in the vein of D&D storytelling, where the people listening to the story are also participants in the outcome of the tale, which, I mean, man, that's a real throwback for all our listeners out there getting insight into Justin and Steven's early childhood bedtime stories. But
well, and they had Mr. Owl too, who Mr. Owl was the guy that owned the time machine that Mr. Bear and Mr. Lion always got into, and it always made the boop 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 sound, and then boom, they showed up wherever it was that we decided they went to.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if time travel is a thing in D&D. It might not be, so maybe we were hitting more of a sci-fi angle also with talking animals and stuff, but yeah, dude, apparently we were dungeon adventuring way back in our youth and didn't even know it.
Yeah,
let's before we get way too much into the movie though, like we both have been, like you mentioned, playing D&D, well for me not technically, but the same vein. I've been playing Pathfinder, which is a competitor to D&D. It's pretty much a similar idea. Bars a lot of the same mechanisms and stuff. I've been playing that with my, I guess, now brothers and sisters-in-law. But we've been playing together way back before Lydia and I got married. So it's probably been about two and a half years or so that I've been playing with them now. Maybe not quite that long. But we've been playing. We're on this giant quest to take out like this vampire kingdom. We have to topple this vampire monarchy that's been like oppressing the people and taking their blood and stuff. And so,
dang,
it's been a long process. But my dude is a human ranger named Baragorn, which is not,
Baragorn, definitely not at all not derivative named, of no. other famous fantasy but, characters.
My dude is like max level strength. So I didn't know how to play this game, right? And you're supposed to like optimize your stats and whatever, and you're supposed to, I mean, not technically, you can do it however you want, but there's like an optimal things you want to go for, optimal skill trees for certain, you know, for certain things. So for instance, I'm an archer because I'm a ranger, and I'm like I put all my stats into strength because I thought that was dope. So I'm like negative like charisma and intelligence. I'm like a super idiot, like can't talk to anybody, but I can carry like 2 tons or something insane.
Nice.
But I think wisdom is like connected, I might be misspeaking on here, but I think wisdom is connected to how good you are with a bow. So my guy, his only real weapon is his bow, but he sucks with it. Like I miss probably 80% of the shots that I take, but I do hit, because I'm so strong, it does like a billion damage.
Nice. So
my dude's just completely just
blind
useless
firing
in the back,
into enemies, just like you launching. Hit something.
Oh, it's great.
That's awesome.
And I'm very stealthy and very strong, and nice. It's pretty great. And I also have a pet bear, whose name is Grills, because he's Bear Grills.
Of course.
And he kind of just doesn't do anything, because we've been doing a lot of spelunking, and we just broke into a bank this past weekend.
Ooh.
We just did a big heist, but we had to tunnel underground, and he is too big to fit, so he is not as helpful as I imagined having a big cool bear would be, because he also has a very small number of hit points, because I don't have armor on him or anything.
No.
And so I'm always nervous to fight with him. So
you have a glass bear as your companion.
Yeah. So he's pretty much useless, but he's cool. He's my dude, Bear Grylls.
Fun.
So
nice.
Yeah.
But, well, I would give some details about my character, but I'm actually the dungeon master for my group. Ooh. I'm the one leading the rest of my friends on a wild and winding journey of adventure. So they've actually brought up to me, because this is kind of the second adventure we've been on, and I've been DM both times, because I actually really enjoy the whole dungeon mastering aspect. And to be honest, like, I don't think the rest of them could really handle it. So that's a whole other thing. But they've been asking me, like, don't you want to, like, play? Like, you know, one of us can do it. And I'm like, not that I, like, don't trust you guys. That's, you know, maybe some factor. But also, like, I'm totally fine DMing. It's such a blast to be the one, like, knowing what's coming up and have these monsters and misadventures planned for whatever the heroes want to do and see how they adapt to my story. We're going through a preset adventure called Storm King's Thunder, which is a pretty well-known D&D story. And it's just got such great lore. None of them listen to this, which is a shame, but I don't want to give any details about the story away from
don't spoil
in the chance that they you know, might get some spoilers on the journey. We have another adventuring day coming up in a couple Saturdays, so hopefully we can make some more progress. But it's just a massive story, and one of the things that I really appreciate about D&D is just the flexibility that it gives you. Like, there are these preset adventures that you can bring the group on, and each DM obviously has their own style as far as storytelling and adventure crafting, but you can really do whatever you want. You can follow the story word for word, or you can, you know, forget any guidebook and just make up a complete random tale on your own, which obviously is kind of the draw of D&D, where, you know, it's a RPG where you can really decide what happens and you can have your characters do whatever they want. And just the freedom and flexibility that it gives you, while just, you know, being obviously an entertaining game to play, is really unique. And obviously there are other RPGs out there which kind of mimic D&D, but it's been such a mainstay in fantasy and nerd culture for, you know, such a long time that it really stands head and shoulders above, you know, any other competitors. I'm sure, you know, like you mentioned Pathfinder, there's other RPGs out there that are excellent, but D&D is obviously the one that comes to mind for most people when you think about stuff like that. So as I've been trying to get more into the game, you know, I got the Monster Manual, so the movie, obviously I don't have a ton of experience with D&D, so, you know, I probably don't appreciate it as much as somebody who's been a longtime gamer would have. But man, just seeing some of the creatures like on screen that are in the book, and, you know, seeing spells cast and decisions being made that I'm like, oh, that's exactly how that would happen, a campaign, was just really cool. And I think that this movie did an excellent job of actually taking care of the source material that it's been given. I don't think it's necessarily based off one D&D adventure in particular, but just kind of set in that world with all these, you know, fantastical beasts and monsters and wizards and characters and stuff like that. But it really takes pride in the source material and doesn't shy away from the magical, fantastical elements. And it really treats the D&D world with a lot of respect, I think. This movie was really funny. Pretty much all the comedy landed for me, which is surprising, especially in this day and age where, you know, we talked about it with the Marvel movies, where they sort of force humor in because they don't want it to be too serious, which, you know, for some genres is fine. Some it doesn't necessarily work out for so well. But I thought this D&D movie really had the right amount of humor. It let funny moments be funny, but it also let the couple emotional moments in the movie just sit and simmer and like be emotional instead of, you know, undercutting them with a one-liner or some snide quip. And yeah, I just really appreciated that about this movie. Like you said, it wasn't, you know, the best movie I've ever seen, but it was far from the worst. I mean, I again went in expecting not a ton from this movie, and it over-delivered on my low expectations. So, before we get into the real nitty-gritty about it, I recommend this movie. I know probably most of our listeners, all three of you guys out there, probably not as big theater goers as I am. So, I mean, I see pretty much everything in the theater, but this movie, if you're interested at all in our review of it, or if the D&D world piques your interest whatsoever, I highly recommend watching it. You can totally wait to see this when it comes out on streaming eventually in the future. So no need to rush into the theater. But yeah, I just thought this movie was a great time all the way through. And, you know, kept me entertained from start to finish, which, like you said, is really all you can ask from a movie at this point in time. So yeah, that's my initial thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it was just a fun time. And this is kind of needed for Dungeons & Dragons, I think. Maybe I'm speaking without knowing everything right now, but Dungeons & Dragons just had a big controversy within the last few months. I don't know how aware of it you were, but basically Wizards of the Coast is the company that owns Dungeons & Dragons. They also own Magic the Gathering and some other things. And Hasbro, I believe, owns Wizards of the Coast. So the big company that makes Monopoly and all those, you know, crap games that everyone has played forever.
Monopoly is a crap game. I just want to emphasize that here and now.
Yeah.
Monopoly's terrible.
Absolutely horrible. But like they're the biggest like mass market, you know, everything you see in Walmart, all those types of games. But Wizards of the Coast is like the one of the main profit drivers because Magic is just absolutely insanely huge. And Dungeons and Dragons is also insanely huge. And so they just tried to pull a stunt a couple months ago. I don't remember all the details, especially because I don't play Dungeons and Dragons, but essentially they're like Dungeons and Dragons is like a framework, right? Like all the rules and the classes and the monsters and stuff like that. Like you said before, it is very customizable where if you just play within like the framework that D&D provides, like there are so many YouTube channels and podcasts and stuff where people just like make up their own stuff inside of Dungeons and Dragons, or they create their own storylines or all this type of stuff, because it is an open source stuff. Like you can obviously buy materials straight for it, like you guys have bought a preset campaign type of deal, and that's obviously where they make a ton of their money. But it always has been an open source, like people are free to just use the materials from it. Like a lot of it is just like public use type of thing. And they tried to change that. So they were going to like not allow people to use it without like buying like official D&D stuff. And they were also going to start like earning royalties pretty much on any media or any merchandising or anything that's been put out with D&D like at all attached to it, even retroactively. And there were some other details to it as well. But basically people just started leaving Dungeons and Dragons in like droves and looking for alternatives like Pathfinder, which has the same type of thing where it's an open source like system and a couple other ones. And it was like they ended up backtracking on that, but a ton of people were pissed off at Wizards of the Coast for doing that, because they're like, hey, like the reason your game is as big as it is because it's a very low barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. Like everyone can just play it to have fun, and obviously a company has to make money too. They can't just make everything for free, but yeah, a lot of people were very upset, especially because it's been around for what, like 40, 50, 60 years. Like this game's been around forever, and you know, and they're just trying to squeeze more money out of people and stuff. And so like D&D was getting a real bad PR rep for the last few months, and a lot of people have just like left anyway. So coming into this movie, which obviously they had started working on this movie well before like any of this happened, because this movie, you know, has probably been 2 years in production and filming, and who knows how long before that in terms of actually writing and planning and, you know, hiring actors and directors and whatever. But this like was a really big hit for them because they really needed this with the amount of PR that's been going on. And a lot of people are probably going to be introduced to Dungeons and Dragons for the first time through this movie, because as big as it is, it still is like a relatively niche, like the number of people that are actively playing like a role-playing game like Dungeons and Dragons on the big scale is much less than people that are going to go and see a Dungeons and Dragons movie, right? Like people who are going to bring their kids, parents bring kids to go see like the next big action movie with dragons in it, right? And so this is going to do good things for the brand, because it's good. It's so fun. Like yeah, the movie, like you
really
said,
is.
Like you said, the comedy is like on point the whole time. Oh my gosh, I was dying in the middle. Full spoilers for this whole movie, by the way.
Of course, you already know the deal. Anything. We don't care about spoilers. We haven't listened to anything we've ever put out. Fully.
Dude, I was dying at the part when Bradley Cooper was playing like the halfling.
Oh, that was so good.
And they went and saw him. And just the whole scene, I was like dying. I'm dying. I was like, it looked kind of off. Like just the effects, but I just did not care. It was hilarious, his whole interactions, and with like Michelle Rodriguez's character Olga. Oh my gosh, it was I was cracking up that whole scene. And the scene when they go to the graveyard and they're just like asking these questions, and I'm like, obviously they're gonna like forget to ask one of the guys the third question, and he's just gonna be stuck there forever. And that's, you know, they remembered,
yeah,
and they remembered again, and they forgot. And I was like, bro, When the dude, he's like, he died because he just like slipped and hit his head on the bathtub and he didn't even go in the battle.
Yeah.
Dude, some of these jokes were like, they were creative too. They weren't just like some of the generic, I don't know. I can't even think of an example, but you know how Marvel just like a lot of the jokes are like kind of just like really low brow, like don't be a dick, like really like, oh,
or they just call somebody by a name that's not their name. They just reference some other piece of like pop culture.
Yeah, yeah. Like a lot of that is just like, is so old and played out, and like all the D&D ones. I mean, it had a couple of those as well, but most of the D&D ones were like fresh. They were like timely. Like they, like you said before, they came at a time in the movie that was appropriate. They like wove into the characters. They weren't just like jokes that any of the characters could have said and still been fine.
Right.
Like they were specific to the character, like the halfling or, I forget his name, but the sorcerer, when he was making jokes about like, oh, magic can't do that. We can't just magic anything.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, actually, I can't do that one thing, you know, and
yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. Like it all, they all tied into the characters and they all had a different sense of humor too. It's not like Marvel where all the characters have the exact same sense of humor, no matter who they are at this point. And so it's just like, it was so fun. Like it was just a fun movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been talking for a while. So if you have anything you want to get over, sorry, I was talking for a while, but yeah, this movie was just so fun.
Yeah, I want to chime in about that halfling sequence with Bradley Cooper, because it was, you know, when the doors open and it's revealed that it's Bradley Cooper playing, you know, basically a hobbit, it was hilarious, obviously. He wasn't in, I think, any of the promotional material, so it was a complete surprise cameo. But that scene, I mean, it was funny to see him, you know, as a tiny person opposite, you know, Michelle Rodriguez's big barbarian character, but... Man, that scene was like really one of the emotional moments I thought played really well in this movie. Like this, Bradley Cooper's playing Michelle Rodriguez's Holga, her like ex-husband, who clearly they had like a lot of relationship issues up to this point. And they like talk about what went wrong in their relationship. And, you know, he's moved on to a new barbarian at this point, which is funny. Like, he clearly has a type, which is hilarious. But, like, they had a serious conversation about their previous relationship, and it, like, worked, even though it was a funny, like, setting for these two characters to be interacting in. I thought that moment played really well, and they didn't, you know, again, they didn't undermine it with some cheesy quip at the end of it. They just let it sit and let it play, and despite its humorous setting, like the emotion in that scene really worked for me. There's another emotional scene later which really comes to mind. The main character played by Chris Pine, and I can't remember any of these characters' names except for Holga, so I apologize in advance. But they are the basically his driving motivation is he's going after this tablet of resurrection, and he wants to use it on his murdered wife. His daughter, you know, was basically part of his like thieving crew when she was young. But that's after his wife had passed away. And we find out later that it's kind of his own fault that happened, because he, you know, stole some Red Wizard treasure and they came looking for it. And his wife was just like wrong place, wrong time. And he wasn't there to protect her. His entire motivation throughout the story is bringing back this character that we really don't spend any time with. And in the final moments, Michelle Rodriguez's character is dealt like a fatal blow from a Red Wizard blade, which is basically uncurable. As the sorcerer says, he's not able to, you know, stop the death that's coming for her because of the magic that the Red Wizards have. And Chris Pine ends up using this tablet of resurrection on Michelle Rodriguez, you know, instead of his wife. And they have a really emotional like flashback sequence where, you know, he's been separated from his daughter for a long time and she doesn't really understand that he's trying to get his wife back. And there's a quote that he has when he's talking to his daughter after they think they've failed, and he's apologizing to her, and he says that, you know, he wasn't trying to bring her mom back, he was trying to bring back his wife, which obviously referring to the same person, but was a really poignant quote for me, because obviously they had different relationships with this woman, and you know, his daughter really didn't know her mom because she died when his daughter was very young. But they have this flashback sequence of Michelle Rodriguez's character, Holga, like basically being there for his daughter and like helping raise her. And even though she wasn't her real mom, was basically the mother figure that she always needed. And so in that moment of realization, Chris Pine then uses the Tablet of Resurrection on Holga, and you know, his daughter has like essentially both her parents back at the end of the story, which I thought was very sweet. And like, again, another emotional moment that worked really, really well for me. That whole last fight scene with like the squad going up against the Red Wizard was great. They even had like a Hulk Loki sequence where this druid transforms into an owl bear and just thrashes a Red Wizard, which was really awesome. I mean, I'll never get tired of seeing like a hulked out protagonist just beat the living daylights out of evil villain. I mean, that's just, it's pure enjoyment every time. But yeah, I mean, the sorcerer having the moment where he's trying to attune with this Helmet of Disjunction to overpower a Red Wizard spell to get into a vault was great, because you see him struggling with himself and eventually realizes that he's the only thing holding himself back, like his lack of confidence and you know, low self-worth is really preventing him from achieving greatness. And you know, he finally crosses that threshold and we see him become a very powerful sorcerer by the end of it, and does what he needs to do. And again, like, I keep reiterating it, but none of these moments were like played off for laughs. There were tons of jokes throughout the movie that did hit, but like they just let the emotion moments sit. And I feel like I'm harping on it, but that seems pretty rare in like these action comedy movies nowadays, where they will just let emotional moments be emotional. And not that this movie is, you know, the like a tearjerker, but it had heart and it let those moments simmer and do what they needed to do. And they just let the funny moments be funny, which I thought was fantastic. Like you said previously, the action wasn't necessarily mind-blowing, especially after recently seeing John Wick, which does have mind-blowing action. Like, I'm not expecting every movie to be like that, but the action was like entertaining with all the magic and fantastical elements D&D provides. It was visually entertaining to watch, and obviously not necessarily knowing all the depths of magic in the D&D world, I wasn't really sure what to expect at different moments in each fight. I didn't recognize every spell that was cast, but still seeing all the different things that were possible in this fantasy world was really entertaining. And I hope that they can actually, you know, make more of these movies. I mean, you talked about Hasbro and the parent company for D&D, like looking to make more money, which again, not going to fault a company for wanting to be profitable, but I think this could be a real great outlet for them as far as bringing in money in a different way. Like, again, there are innumerable D&D stories already out there, and again, just a vast world where you could basically create any story you wanted. And for that to be such an open sandbox for, you know, producers and directors to kind of have their way in, I think would be, you know, just a huge cash cow for the company. Like, if they can all be as entertaining as this one, like, you can bring back the same cast. I think it'd be funny to have the same cast just playing completely different roles in the next movie, where you like have that element of, yeah, it's the same players playing a totally different campaign, but they all obviously look the same because it's, you know, the same people behind the scenes. Like, I think that'd be a really fun gag to have going. But if they want to just, you know, bring in an entirely new cast, that would be fine also. Like, this movie gave me faith that there could be a D&D like franchise out there. And I know everything has to be turned into a franchise nowadays, so I'm not saying franchise for franchise's sake. But again, it's such a vast world with basically infinite possibilities that if they are all done as well as or better than this movie, I would continue to go see them in the future. So yeah, this movie, again, like, was not expecting anything of this caliber to come out, especially after the travesty that is the original D&D movie from the early 2000s, where basically nothing good about it exists. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would totally watch like a D&D cinematic universe, for lack of a better term.
Oh yeah, and I mean there's so many storylines they could pull from. Like, I don't even know if this one, I was just trying to look it up, I don't think this is even actually based off of like a specific storyline in D&D. I know that it has like obviously a lot of references to characters, or to not just characters but like places and items and stuff like that. But it's not even based off like a specific storyline, which obviously a big part of D&D is that characters will create their own storyline, but like still the campaigns have a general arc to them, like a beginning, certain characters you meet, certain plot points you hit, and then a finale. And there's so many of those that they could pull from in order to, you know, make something of a cinematic universe like you're talking about. So they could make infinite movies out of this. And
oh, yeah.
It seemed like the actors had a blast, which obviously doesn't mean that they come back because it's a business and they have other things they're working on and whatever. But you'd think that like they'd be interested in continuing something like this as a franchise. So, I mean, yeah, there's just so much you could do with the world with these same characters, with different characters. Like, I mean, I thought these characters were super endearing. They all had different personalities, mm-hmm. but they all worked well together, and they were all just like fun to watch on screen in their own way.
And they all like contributed to the story throughout. Yeah. Like, it's not like any of them was just kind of along for the ride, I guess, exactly. Except for, you know, Chris Pine's Bard character. I mean, he's obviously the main character that we're following throughout the story, but I mean, they may even make fun of it at one point where he's like, I'm the guy who plans, and the rest of them all have some like tactile function in this heist that they're planning.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just kind of the planner guy, and they make that like a little light of it. But then like by the end of it, everybody has an active role in taking down these Red Wizards. And I thought it was great because it's rare that, again, nowadays that you get a team movie where each member of the team is, you know, not only has an important role, but is actually vital in the plan succeeding. And I thought mm-hmm. that was, you know, very, very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Everyone had their moment to shine. And everybody, like, there was nobody who was just the butt of the joke the whole time, mm-hmm. which is something that, like, I don't really love in movies. When there's a character who's purely there to do nothing but be the joke, which is kind of what like Drax has turned into, for mm-hmm. example, in the MCU. And so, yeah, like it was fun. And speaking of heists, dude, my favorite scene, as much as I love the halfling scene, my favorite scene was hands down the wagon heist, or I guess the cart heist in the middle.
I mean, it's kind of like a reverse heist, actually, because they, like, put something into the cart instead of, like, stealing something out of it. But, yeah, go ahead and explain the scene, because this is my favorite scene in the movie also.
Yeah, so they basically had to get into this vault room, and they had gotten this magical helmet that would ignore the enchantments on the vault door, but the sorcerer wasn't able to attune it to himself, so they came up with a plan B. Basically, the plan B was, okay, all these rich people are bringing all of their treasure into this vault, so it's going to be opened and put in there, so we just have to find a way to get... They had these portals. They're like, we have to find a way to get these portals into, like, an object and get the object into the vault, so then we can get into the vault without going through the magical door, since we can't skip the enchantments on the door. Relatively convoluted without seeing the movie, but... So they end up having this heist where they get like this big portrait, and they put a portal on the portrait, and then they go to like get it. They have to get it inside this cart without people noticing that it's getting put on the cart, right? Obviously, because if people notice them putting it on the cart, then they're going to think something's up, because something is up, and then they're going to be in trouble. So they end up like lying on the ground, sticking it onto the bottom with like glue of this cart. And then once it's stuck to the bottom, they open up the portal. So that way they're in like their room and they look through their portal and they see just the underside of the cart. And they end up prying off the wood on the bottom of the cart, climbing up through the bottom into the cart. Of course, some things go wrong, like it starts to unstick, so someone's hanging out and like dragging the mirror behind them and stuff, but mm-hmm. or not the mirror, the portrait behind them, but basically end up pulling it back up and in. And then it's just, oh, it's so cool. Like the way that they thought of doing that and like using the portal mechanics. And then like the person who can turn into, I forget, she's like a druid that can turn into any type of animal. She just like, you know, then turns into a fly, seals it back up, flies away. And like, it ends up not working for them because of, you know, the vault that it gets taken into. They end up putting it, the guards end up putting it on the ground. So they end up just looking in and seeing the ground when they look through the portal. So it doesn't work in the end, but it's like the coolest scene. It's so creative and so interesting the way that it like uses the portals and stuff, because there's so many times in stories where a type of magic will get introduced and then it's used and then never used again. And it's like, you always think, why would the characters not make full use of this? Like Doctor Strange's portals, for example, it's like they can cut off people's limbs. Why does he not just like cut off Thanos' head with it? Problem solved. Or why does he not just make a portal under Thanos' feet when he first shows up to Earth? Problem solved. Or when he first sees him on Atlas? Problem solved. Like, so many movies introduce technology or magic that they then just like never use to its full potential. And so this was an example where they actually did, I thought, because they set very clear limitations on it. Like, it can only be used within range that we can see, probably about a quarter mile. And then they make full use of that multiple times during the movie. And it's just like, oh, it's so cool. Because, yeah, like I said, a lot of times it doesn't get used. So, yeah, this movie had a lot of creative uses of its magic and of each of its characters' unique abilities. And yeah, stuff like that just makes me really appreciate the effort that goes into a movie. But yeah, that scene, the reverse heist of the cart in the middle, was definitely the coolest part of the movie for me.
Yeah, totally agree. The use of the hither thither stick, I think it's called, which is like this portal staff, was really entertaining. And yeah, there's several callbacks to previous magic that gets mentioned that it, excuse me, there's several callbacks to previous magic that is used later in the story, like the, you know, power dampening bracelet that they use to stop the Red Wizard at the end, or the invisibility charm that Chris Pine's daughter has on from the start. Obviously, the Tablet of Resurrection is kind of the MacGuffin that they're after the entire time. But yeah, I mean, this movie did a great job of really not misusing the magical elements that it had brought in. Obviously, there's near infinite spells that you could cast in D&D, but they kind of picked and chose what they were going to use, and each thing had its moment to shine. I also really liked basically all the side characters. I mean, Hugh Grant is the main villain, so I don't know if I would call him the a side character, but he was very hateable as Forge. I do. He is an easy name, so I'll remember that his name. But he was, you know, part of their thieving team in the flashback in the beginning, and we found out that he purposely betrays the team so that he can become rich, and he strikes a deal with these Red Wizards to become even more wealthy and escape the life that he's built for himself. He was just so smarmy and hateable. I thought he was great. I liked the paladin that they find along the way that helps them get to the Helmet of Disjunction the underworld, or the Upside Down, or whatever it's called. And
the Underdark?
Underdark, that's what it is. Upside Down is Stranger Things, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, they also have lots of D&D references in Stranger Things.
Yeah, yeah, very 80s. But yeah, the Underdark is where they travel with this paladin. And he was hilarious. He was like the perfect D&D NPC character, where he like is exactly what the protagonists need to, you know, get them through these few obstacles, get them to the thing that they need to get, and then just disappears. Like, they even joke about, like, he just walks off in a straight line. They make bets about whether he's going to go, like, around this rock or go right over it, and he just walks, like, in a perfectly straight line into the distance, basically never to be seen again until practically the end credits. But yeah, I mean, he was great. The fact that he was just so full of himself and so serious, like, didn't take any sense of humor whatsoever, didn't appreciate irony or sarcasm, was just great. But he was also a total badass that got the job done when they needed him to. So yeah, he was fantastic. I like the fat dragon that they find in the Underdark protecting this
thing. Was hilarious.
Helmet of Disjunction. That was, I don't think I've ever seen such a chonky dragon boy, but he was, I don't know what gender this dragon is, but was pretty funny to see, because you normally see, you know, dragons are lithe and muscular and like quick and threatening, but this dragon was just like big and fat and slow but still a threat. And it was just an interesting take on, you know, a creature that we've seen 100 times in fantasy up to this point, but never quite like this. So that was an interesting take that I appreciated. I know the D&D world has tons of different dragon types, and they all are, you know, dragons are supposed to be like intelligent beings, and they, you know, depending on the type, have their own personalities and goals and what have you. I lost my train of thought. Dragons, depending on the type that they are in the D&D world, have different personalities and goals and motivations and all this. But it was really interesting to see just an atypical fantasy dragon in this story. But yeah, I mean, the paladin was like the standout side character for me. He was hysterical. Aside from Bradley Cooper's halfling, of course, that was
he was also great.
I hope that it becomes like a running gag in these movies if they, you know, do make more, and I hope they do, of having like a big name actor just cameo for like 5 seconds as some side NPC.
Yeah,
and just like, yeah, again, don't put them in the marketing at all. Zero mention in the trailers, not on the poster, not on the, you know, like main credits that you see as like, oh, starring blah blah blah. But yeah, I would love to see more famous actors cameo in the D&D franchise. I think that'd be great.
They basically pulled off a No Way Home, leaving Bradley Cooper out of the marketing, just like they did Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. Pretty much the same scale.
Yeah.
If that halfling walked out of that portal into Ned's house, that would have been, I was going to say awesome, maybe not.
That would have been something, that's for sure. But
it would have been something. But something you said there brought up one of the things that I said to you immediately after the movie, and you had it on your mind too. But like every character that was on the side character that they met either gave them something insanely useful, told them exactly where they needed to go, just happened to know all the information that they needed, which like is so convenient. And if it was any other type of a setting or a story, I would have hated it. But because it's D&D, like that's literally just what happens in D&D. I gave the example when we were talking about The Rise of Skywalker, which horrible, terrible, no good, very bad movie. But in that movie, like they go to this sand planet, they find Lando just happens to be there. He tells them where this tracker thing is. They just happen to go there. Like they find this dagger that just happens to be like a puzzle piece that if they stand where they happen to stand in the exact right spot is a map. Right. And like all this just total nonsense that is just like when, like, I don't remember who it was, but there's an author quote that goes something along the lines of like, coincidence or convenience, to get your characters into trouble is good, but like convenience or coincidence to get your characters out of trouble is terrible, right? Like when something happens that's just 0% odds, but it like adds an extra pressure to the story or like messes with the character's plan, something they can't predict. Like in this movie, when the portal gets placed face down, right? The odds of that happening are low, but it throws a wrinkle and they have to mess with it. Or it messes with their plan. They have to adjust their plans and figure out something else. Like that works for the story. If they just, in like in most stories, if someone just magically shows up, gives you the one thing you need, and then leaves with no setup or anything, just like luckily happens, that's like such a terrible form of storytelling, because there's no stakes. It takes away all of like your interest in, okay, well, why should I care about anything? Why should I care about the villain or any danger, because stuff just happens? It ruins immersion, stuff like that. And so, like in Rise of Skywalker, that happened like pretty much every scene.
Oh,
and so such dumb. A terrible movie. As there was, I mean, there were a lot of other problems with that movie as well.
We would spend hours talking about the absolute dog crap that is Rise of Skywalker.
Exactly. But one of the many problems with that was that, right? But when it's a Dungeons and Dragons setting, like that's exactly how a campaign goes. Like you go find one person who directs you to the next thing, who directs you to the next thing, who happens to know this person, who teaches you this one spell that you need to know. And it's like, mm-hmm. It fits. Like it's one giant fetch quest after another, basically. And like, I thought it really worked in this movie. Whereas, you know, as I've made apparent in other movies, such as one that I just mentioned, it is a hindrance to the plot instead. Here it just like leaned into like the campiness and the silliness that is Dungeons and Dragons. Like it didn't try to take itself too seriously and lose some of what people love about Dungeons and Dragons. It just leaned into it. And even how each of the characters was their own class and like had their own different strengths related to that while still putting a bit of a twist on them. Like that was really cool. So like there was enough that was uniquely D&D. I mean, I guess not unique because it's not the only... role-playing game out there, but you know, things that make role-playing games unique compared to other media forms or game forms.
Yeah,
and they lean into that enough that it was just like, oh, these are great.
Yeah, I gotta emphasize that point, because I mean, for the most part, if you just look at the plot of this movie, it's pretty formulaic as far as like an adventure story goes. But I agree with you that I think that really works for a D&D movie, because like you said, finding X character that leads you perfectly to X object is exactly what D&D is all about. Like you're going on these adventures that have different trails that you go down, and it leads you eventually in the end to the main point of the quest. And you get tons of help along the way. But I mean, that was perfectly captured in this movie, like the essence of what a campaign is. And yeah, again, I think that really works. I don't want them to continue to make necessarily the most formulaic movies. I think there's, again, a lot of room to be creative and have a lot of interesting stories and characters and plot developments as they continue this franchise. I hope. But yeah, I think especially for a kind of first dip into what will hopefully be a long series for D&D. It worked perfectly as just kind of a foot in the door with generic sounds like I'm putting it badly, but it was a generic action adventure story, but it was well done in the realm of D&D, in the spirit of D&D, to put it that way. So yeah, I mean, I would have to give this movie like a probably like a high 7, which is way more than I was expecting to get out of this movie going in. The trailers looked interesting enough to get me in the theater, but again, neither of us expected to have such a good time. I mean, I think the funniest scene in the movie, and we talked about our favorite scene being the reverse heist with the portrait and the portal. But the funniest scene in the movie was this hilarious bit of CGI where the sorcerer casts like a fake image of Chris Pine's bard character to distract the guards. Yeah. And as they're kind of using this as a diversion to, you know, make their way into the castle, the sorcerer gets stuck and his concentration starts breaking. And this this casting of the bar just starts like glitching out, and he just, his face warps, his and his like dialogue starts skipping back on itself, and his like it just gets all googly moogly, and it was just it was hilarious. I was cracking up in the theater watching this. It was it was so excellently funny. And yeah, I mean the CGI obviously in that part was supposed to look like a little goofy because it's you know, a spell gone wrong, but I mean for the most part the effects in this movie were pretty good. I liked the dragon, I liked the way all the magic looked, I liked the creatures that they ran into, like the druid owl bear looked fantastic. I forget what the name of the beast is, but the one that was in the labyrinth at the end that was like projecting an image of itself to distract its prey so that it could ensnare it was great. The gelatinous cube was fantastic. I loved seeing that and how they like utilized it to their advantage. Gelatinous cube, a very famous D&D monster, of course, who also made an appearance in Pixar's Onward. And that's probably actually the second best D&D movie because Onward, I think, is very underrated. But yeah, I mean, D&D, Honor Among Thieves, I'd have to give like probably like a 7.7, 7.8 which is way, again, way, way higher than I expected going in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably give it like a 7.5 I mean, I've been debating over the last few minutes while you were talking. I was thinking, I think I enjoyed this more than Wakanda Forever. I don't think it's a better movie than Wakanda Forever, but I definitely just enjoyed it more. Like, I would go back to the theater to watch this again before going back to see Wakanda Forever a second time, which part of it is like the somber tone of Wakanda Forever, obviously, with you know, Chadwick Boseman's passing and dealing with that and everything. So it's not just like a fun movie that you just want to go watch again and again. But like, even if I think that movie might be like actually better, I just enjoyed this more. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it more than John Wick, because I didn't, but in a very different way. Like, I think the humor in this was much better than the humor in John Wick. Mm-hmm. I think John Wick had a couple funny moments, but...
I mean, John Wick's not trying to be a funny movie, though. That's
no, but they definitely tried adding more humor in this one as compared to some of the earlier ones. And I thought some of it was funny, but this one was just, like, solid humor all the way through. Obviously, the action's nowhere near as good. But, yeah, this movie was just a really fun time. So I think just, like, a solid 7.5 Like, it's not going to be one that... I'll honestly probably even remember like this same time next year, so I can't really go any higher than that because of it. But yeah, definitely like a super sleeper hit, and hopefully this like gets more sequels and stuff because this was so fun.
Yeah, I will say in relation to John Wick, the only downside I have for this movie was that it came out the week after John Wick, which means that it took all the like Dolby and IMAX screens away from the John Wick showings. Which
for you
is tough.
One of you that is going to see this John Wick like six times in a row.
Well, I've seen it twice. Everyone else, it's fine. That's only twice. So watch yourself. But I mean, yeah, I've raved about Dolby in the past, and you know my feelings on like the kind of premiere viewership. And I saw, what did I see? I saw a movie recently on just like a normal screen. And... man, I tell you, after seeing something in Dolby or IMAX, going to like a normal movie screen, just it feels so tiny. Unless you're sitting, you know, way up close, the screen is just so much smaller. The sound is less. It's just, to me, it's not as enjoyable an experience. And I think that, you know, the big premiere blockbusters deserve to be seen on like that premiere format as much as possible. So the bad thing for this movie is that the following week the Mario movie came out and then booted D&D off all the premiere screens. So I mean, I guess that's just the tale of the trade as far as movies go. You got new stuff coming out each week to bump the old stuff out. But
usually there's not like super big top line movies 3 weeks in a row, though. Like, there's new movies coming out pretty much every week or two, but usually there's not like big headlining ones like these last three have been, you know, like from major studios and stuff. So it is a little bit surprising, but I can't wait for the summer deluge. But
the summer's like going to be big. We got Barbie and Oppenheimer dropping the same weekend. That's going to be a huge, huge theater trip for the boys.
We also just got the first trailer for the Marvels today. So pretty interesting. I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it. Again, it's not one that I'm like super, super amped for, but either way, still not watching trailers for it.
Yeah, I hope there's another one that we can put on our surprise hit list for this year where, I mean, obviously we're, you know, you and I as Marvel connoisseurs are going to be in the theater for the Marvels, but
yeah,
I don't think either of us is really expecting too much given the mediocrity of the first one. And I did really enjoy WandaVision and Ms. Marvel, which have the two other characters that are coming in to join Carol Danvers as leads in the follow-up here. But I would love to come out of the theater saying, wow, that movie was really good, actually. I enjoyed that quite a bit. So we'll see what happens when that comes out.
I think my expectations are at a point where I could very easily be pleasantly surprised with it. Because I think my expectations are pretty much not a whole lot right now. I'm not expecting it actively to be bad. I just am like, okay, when it comes out, it comes out. I'm not going to put any of my thought towards it until then. But yeah, that was the D&D movie. Oh, we also got a Secret Invasion trailer last week as well, which I also have not watched. Mm-hmm. But it's good to know that it's actually happening because we had gone a long time with no details on like any of the Disney Plus MCU stuff. So it's good to know we're actually getting it, and it's coming out relatively soon in May, I believe. Which is pretty awesome. And
in May, we get Guardians. Tickets are on sale now for Guardians 3. Yes. They've been on sale for a week, I know.
Yes, yes.
I've already got mine. I set reminders on my phone for when tickets become available so I can catch them opening night. But if y'all are interested in going to see it, y'all better get in line because tickets are going fast. So that's, we both mentioned it was very high on our anticipated list this year. So that's that's the next big one on the horizon in I think 3 weeks from tomorrow is the release date of May 5th.
Yes, sir.
That should be a good one. We're getting a lot of promotional material with Rocket on the front of these posters. And
I know.
James Gunn has repeatedly said that this is kind of the end for this Guardians team. So we know that they're either splitting up or at least one character is going to bite the dust. So I wouldn't be surprised if multiple of them die, which will be very sad given the time that we spent with this Guardians team.
Honestly...
But yeah, looking forward to that one very much, very much.
Yeah, I think it will be good. I think the Guardians were so fresh and fun when they came out. And I think as time has gone on, they haven't quite known what to do with them, especially in any of the team-ups. And it's been so long since we got Guardians 2. Like, they've just been kind of awkward, jokey side characters in some other movies, like the beginning of Love and Thunder and obviously Infinity War. So it'll be really nice to see them like as the headliners again, because I think that's where they are the best, where they actually all have time to interact with each other and they have time to like have their own individual moments. And we just obviously can't get that when they're a big team teaming up with other big teams.
Right.
So I've kind of gone a bit lukewarm just on the Guardians as a whole, just because their last few outings haven't been like super great. So I think it's going to be great for them to just have one last front center. And then if all of them end up being gone after this, I'm assuming that won't be the case. I'm assuming a few of them will stay and a few of them will be gone for good, dead or retired or whatever it may be. I'm assuming a couple of them at least will stick around. But whatever it ends up being, I think it's good. I think it's better than just continually dragging them out. Although it is a bummer to see, you know, more of the characters from the Infinity Saga that we love, you know, not be there, because the number that still exist are just getting fewer and fewer. So, you know, it's how it goes. Obviously, all these actors age and they have other projects. Like, it's a lot to expect them to be in the same role for 15 years. But definitely will be bittersweet.
I do want to add, you're forgetting the most recent appearance by the Guardians, which is their holiday special, which I actually quite enjoyed. A good bit.
Because they were front and center, because they weren't like with anybody else. They were just doing their own thing. Well, Kevin Bacon kind of stole the show, but...
But I totally agree with you that the Guardians are best when they're the focus of the story. And and obviously having a big team like that, it's tough when they're all background characters, because you can't really give each of them their own amount of love. But I think having the whole team be focused on for an entire movie is going to be a great way to send off this iteration of the team. So that's going to be our next one. But this has been our review of the D&D Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves movie. Both of us recommend it quite highly. Again, if you get a chance to check it out in theaters, go for it. But certainly when it comes out on streaming, I would highly recommend giving this one a go.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Go and check out Bradley Cooper's second shortest character to come out this year. You think he's taller? You think his halfling's taller than Rocket?
They're probably about the same size. But
check out his other raccoon-sized person in Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves.
Yeah, we'll be back with another review in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir.
But that has been it for now. I'll talk to y'all later.
Peace.